Good evening and welcome to a worship service known as Tenebrae or Shadows on this evening of Good Friday. This is a three-day period known as Triduum that includes Maundy Thursday, Good Friday, and Saturday as we remember the last events of Jesus' life. And tonight we remember his crucifixion. The Tenebrae service is an ancient worship service where there is singing and there is prayer and there are readings. After each reading, a candle will be blown out until at the end of our service, we will be in darkness. My name is Mitchell Hay, and it is my good pleasure to be the pastor of the Essex Center United Methodist Church.
And I'm Barb Lemmel. I'm glad to be with you all tonight.
We also want to thank all our readers. Their names are on the slides where their readings are at, and for our musicians. That includes Catherine Parker and June Packard and Danielle O'Hallisey. We invite you to worship now in the ancient form of Tenebrae with a call to worship.
We've been here before.
A place of grieving and mourning.
We've been here before.
A night that seems like it won't end.
We've been here before.
Knee deep in fear, knee deep in doubt.
Lord knows, we've been here before.
Good Friday, the night Christ died.
So once again, we find ourselves here.
In virtual community, in God's arms.
Where else would we go when the world falls apart?
Let us worship God.
For he grew up before him like a young plant and like a root out of dry ground. He had no form or majesty that we should look at him. Nothing in his appearance that we should desire him. He was despised and rejected by others, a man of suffering and acquainted with infirmity. And as one from others hide their faces, he was despised and we held him of no account. Surely he has borne our infirmities and carried our diseases. Yet we accounted him stricken, struck down by God and afflicted. But he was wounded for our transgressions, crushed for our iniquities. Upon him was the punishment that made us whole, and by his bruises we are healed. All we like sheep have gone astray. We have all turned to our own way, and the Lord has laid on him the iniquity of us all.
While he was at Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at the table, a woman came in with an alabaster jar of very costly ointment of nard. And as she broke open the jar and poured the ointment on his head, But some were there who said to one another in anger, "Why was an ointment wasted in this way?" But Jesus said, "Let her alone. Why do you trouble her? She has performed a good service for me. For you always have the poor with you, and you can show kindness to them whenever you wish, but you will not always have me. She has done what she could. She has anointed my body beforehand for its burial." Then Judas Iscariot, who was one of the 12, went to the chief priests in order to betray him to them. When they heard it, they were greatly pleased and promised to give him money. So he began to look for an opportunity to betray him.
Then Jesus went with them to a place called Gethsemane. And he said to his disciples, "Sit here while I go over there and pray." He took with him Peter and the two sons of Zebedee and began to be grieved and agitated. Then he said to them, "I am deeply grieved, even to death. Remain here and stay awake with me." And going a little farther, he threw himself on the ground and prayed, "My Father, if it is possible, let this cup pass from me. Yet not what I want, but what you want." And then he came to the disciples and found them sleeping. And he said to Peter, "So could you not stay awake with me 1 hour?"
The third candle.
Good Friday by Maria Melendez Kelson. Jesus, I want my sins back. My prattle, pride, and private prices, climbing, clinching, clocking. I might loan you a few for the evening, so you don't show up at your own crucifixion, naked of all purpose. But for God's sake, don't spill any redemption on them. They're my signature looks. Body by envy, makeup and wardrobe provided by avarice. Lord, if you take away my inordinate cravings, what the hell's left? Do you know how much I paid for my best rages? I want them all back, if they're so to die for. Else, shred my palms, wash my face with spit, let the whip unlace my flesh and free the naked blood. Let me be tumbled to immortality with the stew of flood debris that is my life.
While he was still speaking, suddenly a crowd came, and the one called Judas, one of the 12, was leading them. He approached Jesus to kiss him, but Jesus said to him, "Judas, is it with a kiss that you are betraying the Son of Man?" Then they seized him and led him away, bringing him into the high priest's house. But Peter was following at a distance. When they had kindled a fire in the middle of the courtyard and sat down together, Peter sat among them. Then a servant girl, seeing him in the firelight, stared at him and said, "This man also was with him." But he denied it, saying, "Woman, I do not know him." A little while later, someone else, on seeing him, said, "You also are one of them." But Peter said, "Man, I am not." Then about an hour later, still another kept insisting, "Surely this man also was with him, for he is a Galilean." But Peter said, "Man, I do not know what you are talking about." At that moment, while he was still speaking, the cock crowed. The Lord turned and looked at Peter. Then Peter remembered the word of the Lord, how he had said to him, "Before the cock crows today, you will deny me three times." And he went out and wept bitterly.
The fourth light.
Awesome. Great. So then we'll have Alyssa for the next.
They took Jesus to the high priest, and all the chief priests, the elders, and the scribes were assembled. Peter had followed him at a distance, right into the courtyard of the high priest, and he was sitting with the guards, warming himself at the fire. Then the high priest stood up before them and asked Jesus, "Have you no answer? What is it that they testify against you?" But he was silent and did not answer. Again, the high priest asked him, "Are you the Messiah, the Son of the Blessed One?" As soon as it was morning, the chief priests held a consultation with the elders and scribes and the whole council. They bound Jesus, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate. Pilate asked him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" He answered him, "You say so." Then the chief priests accused him of many things. Pilate asked him again, "Have you no answer? See how many charges they bring against you." But Jesus made no further reply, so that Pilate was amazed.
The fifth candle is extinguished.
Thank you.
This Good Friday night, like all Good Friday nights, we're aware of Jesus' crucifixion and so many other crucifixions around the world, and even crucifixions in our own lives and in our own hearts. And so on this night, I often recall the words of the Episcopal priest, Barbara Brown Taylor, who says that one of the great benefits of reading and rereading Bible stories, as we do tonight, is that the more we come to know the great physician, as Jesus sometimes is called, the more that we realize that he heals our wounds by stitching the edges of our lives to his.
The poet Jan Richardson tells a story of Peter Story, who's a Methodist bishop in South Africa, who shares an imagery that's even more visceral than that of Barbara Brown Taylor's. He shares this tender scene in John's gospel where, when Jesus on the cross addresses his mother and the disciple whom Jesus loved and tells them, "Woman, here is your son." And to him, "Here is your mother." And Bishop Story says that Jesus, in his crucifixion, creates a new kind of family, a family created in and through and by his sacrifice on the cross. Story said that from the cross, Jesus created a community that was to become family to the widow, to the orphan, to the outcast, to the stranger. He writes that if we have a call to community like that, a sacred trust, as he calls it, if we accept that, how can anyone suffer hunger or homelessness or need? Would there be any lonely old people? Could there be a single unwanted child?
So he says that in that story that Jesus, of Jesus saying, "Here is your mother, here is your son," he's saying that we're all beloved children of God, that everything that befalls someone else on the planet befalls us as brother, as sister, as sibling, as parent, as child. Mm-hmm. Every human person is kin. Every victim's pain is our pain. And so George Floyd is my dead brother. And though sometimes this is harder for me to live with, mm-hmm. Derek Chauvin too is my brother. We are all kin.
Here's the imagery that Bishop Story uses. He says, from the cross where he is nailed, Jesus nails us to each other.
It's a pretty dramatic image of family, right?
Yes.
And yet family is, there's something about being nailed together with all the joy and sometimes all the sorrow of that, that to love is to open ourselves up to immense gladness and also to immense pain. There's wounding, there's suffering, there's pain, all mixed in with the joy and the relationship. And that too is partly the story of this night. Barbara Brown Taylor says, Jesus stitches the edges of our wounds to his. Bishop Story says, Jesus nails us to each other. And I think he implies to him as well.
in the crucifixion of Jesus on the cross, we discover a hard and beautiful truth. It's in the mutual woundedness of being human that we find our healing, because our wounds are nailed not only to each other, but to Jesus too. We know in the midst of the pain and in the midst of the death that we see in the headlines and in our own families, that there is healing and there is resurrection. We are nailed to each other.
Which is maybe why this is called Good Friday. It's not an easy good.
But it is good. Amen. Amen.
Then the soldiers led him into the courtyard of the palace, that is, the government's headquarters. And they called together the whole cohort. And they clothed him in a purple cloak. And after twisting some thorns into a crown, they put it on him. And they began saluting him, "Hail, King of the Jews!" They struck his head with a reed, spat upon him, and knelt down in homage to him. After mocking him, they stripped him of the purple cloak and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him out to crucify him. They compelled a passerby who was coming in from the country to carry his cross. It was Simon of Cyrene, the father of Alexander and Rufus. Then they brought Jesus to the place called Golgotha, which means the place of a skull. And they offered him wine mixed with myrrh, but he did not take it. And they crucified him and divided his clothes among them, casting lots to decide which each would take.
The sixth light.
A poem from Jan Richardson. You will know this blessing by how it does not stay still, by the way it refuses to rest in one place. You will recognize it by how it takes first one form, then another. Now running down the face of the mother who watches the breaking of the child she had born. Now in the stance of the woman who followed him here and will not leave him bereft. Now it twists in anguish on the mouth of the friend whom he loved. Now it bears itself in the wound, the cry, the finishing and final breath. This blessing is not in any one of these alone. It is what binds them together. It is what dwells in the space between them, though it be torn and gaping. It is what abides in the tear the rending makes.
It was 9 o'clock in the morning when they crucified him. The inscription of the charge against him read, "The King of the Jews." And with him, they crucified two bandits, one on his right and one on his left. Seventh light.
From noon on, darkness came over the whole land until 3 p.m. And about 3 o'clock, Jesus cried out with a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani?" That is, "My God, my God, why have you forsaken me?" Then Jesus cried again with a loud voice and breathed his last.